This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine, the consumer resource of pilots and aircraft owners.
Russ Niles reporting for AvWeb. We're Dan Grider, very well known for flying around in his big red Herpa DC-3. But it's a very important day in the life of the DC-3, Dan. Very historic moment for the aircraft and for aviation in general. Why don't you tell us all about it?
That's right, Russ. Today is December 17th, and it's the anniversary of not only the first flight conducted by the Wright brothers out in Kitty Hawk, but it's also the first flight of the Douglas DC-3 from Santa Monica, California, December 17th, 1935.
Why is the DC-3 so important, and what led up to its creation?
Well, the DC-3 became a very produced and very utilized aircraft for not only civilian and airline use, but of course in the war, the variant known as the C-47. About 14,000 of them were eventually produced and used and still in use worldwide. What led up to the production of the DC-3 was, of course, the DC-1 and the DC-2. The DC-1 was produced out of a need, and that actually occurred because of a famous crash that occurred in March 31 of 1931, and that was a Ford tri-motor that crashed in Bazaar, Kansas, about 120 miles from Kansas City. TWA Flight 599 perished with all on board. A pilot and seven passengers died due to the failure of a wooden spar on that aircraft in March of 1931.
Somebody very famous on board that aircraft, and that was kind of a spur for the CAA, which was a predecessor of the FAA at the time, right?
It was. Newt Rockne was the head football coach for Notre Dame, and he perished on that flight as well. It took about 22 months from that crash until the first flight of an all-metal airplane produced by Boeing, and that airplane was called the 247. There's only one of those left in existence, and that's hanging in the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C., for those that want to see an example of that. It's hanging right next to a DC-3 out there at the Smithsonian, so you can clearly see the difference in the two airplanes. But Boeing built the 247, and it first flew February 8th of 33, so about 22 months from the time of impact from that tri-motor until Boeing had a flying all-metal airplane.
Okay, so why didn't TWA just buy Boeing 247s? Why did they have to go to Douglas and ask for a whole new airplane?
Well, Boeing built the 247, and it was allotted that all the 247s coming off the line were going to go to United. And United and Boeing were relative companies. One owned the other and were very closely knitted there together. So it was TWA who was in a bind for an airplane. It was exactly 6 months from the first flight of that 247 until TWA wrote a letter to Donald Douglas. It was actually sent in the form of a telegram on August 2 of 33, and it basically said, "Help, build us an all-metal airplane because we don't have an airplane to fly." And Donald Douglas received that telegram on August 2 of 1933, and he went to work.
Now, that was not easy for Donald Douglas. He was not really set up or tooled for building what, at the time, was a very large and sophisticated airplane. He almost went under doing it, didn't he?
He did, and he leveraged everything he had. He borrowed money, and he did everything he could. And the amazing thing, Russ, is that 11 months from the date of receiving that telegram, the DC-1 first flew July 1 of 33. So it took from August of 33, took 11 months until that DC-1 first flew. And that to me is an amazing statistic. Those people built a huge all-metal twin-engine tail-dragging airplane in 11 months and flew it.
Okay, and then along came the DC-2, which actually saw some traction, but it was really the 3 that changed the world, right?
It was. The DC-1, they only built one of it, and it was basically a prototype, and they built 85 DC-2. I think Donald Douglas would have been more than satisfied to plunder along simply building DC-2s. He had worldwide success with the DC-2, and he had more orders than he could fill. He was very content at the rate and profitability of simply building the two, until he got a phone call from C.R. Smith, who was at American Airlines at that time. The call came in wanting a wider, larger, what they called a sleeper transport. They wanted to put sleeping berths in a DC-2 and make it a transcon airplane. And Donald Douglas was very reluctant, and they say it took more than 2 hours on this telephone call between Smith and Douglas for Smith to convince Douglas that there was a need for a sleeper airplane. You got to remember that building a DC-3 or a DST out of a DC-2 is basically retooling and re-engineering the whole shop and the whole production line.
Well, I guess he's glad he did. The DC-3 and the sleeper version was popular for a while, but it really took the war to make it really take off, right?
It did. They built a little more than 300 of the DC-3s, and they built those eventually. What came to pass there was that people would buy the DST, the Douglas Sleeper Transport, and they would yank the berths out and put 29 seats in it and fly it for passenger revenue. So Douglas started selling the DC-3 in both what he called day and night versions of that airplane. So that airplane, the iteration of the DC-1 and DC-2 and DC-3, it flew from runway 21 at Santa Monica on December 17th, 1935, which is 75 years ago today.
What's there now? Is there any remnant of the Douglas factory or any evidence of the big place in history that it has there?
There's very little left of the actual Douglas production facilities. The old-timers can still point out faint landmarks and areas and things that are original and markings on the ground where things used to be, but there's no original Douglas plant of any kind left. Of course, the Douglas company eventually got very large and moved down to Long Beach and expanded down there in the war years. Several airplanes, war airplanes, were built at Santa Monica as well, but Long Beach was where the lion's share of the Douglas aircraft were eventually built.
Well, other than the world-famous Fiddling Around America tour, what would you say the biggest contribution the DC-3 made to aviation?
Well, Russ, it just fit so many people and so many uses and so many... It was just such a utility airplane used by so many in so many places around the world that they built 14,000 of these airplanes, and the airlines, the people, the wars, the war efforts that this airplane supported has just abounded. And even 75 years later, the airplane is still going strong.
Well, happy birthday, DC-3, and thanks for talking with us today, Dan. Russ Niles reporting for AvWeb. Thanks for listening.
This podcast has been brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine. For more information on Aviation Consumer, log on to www.aviationconsumer.com.